Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
I do have a take.
Point of contention.
KD could be a head coach. I could be a head coach.
Welcome to Point of Contention. Five subjects, 5 minutes, 5 points of contention. Coming up on the show, the shot clock is ticking on Kelly Oubre. Are the Jazz the NBA's best team? Bradley Beal loves DC, but is he about to be traded? Dame's time is wasted away in Portlandia, and what the hell happened Monday night in Atlanta? I'm Zach Harper, the host of POC, Jade Hoy producing. In this corner, the Bay Area legend, author of two best-selling books about the Warriors, Marcus Thompson. Marcus, first off, happy Black History Month. People say that? That's a thing, right? It's a thing.
I think it's Mary Black History Month.
Okay.
No, there's no Mary. What are you talking about here?
I side with Marcus on this. Marcus, Mary. I want to give you the floor to let people know how important it is we celebrate Black History Month and make it not just February.
Yes, that statement is meaningless. We'll go back to being just who we are in March 1st. So I'm not about to sit here and get on some soapbox so Ethan can go right back to being who he was. Like, no. He should know by now. He's got his little buzz cut, so he's going to be him. That's fine.
So it's happy, not
Mary. And in this corner, the author of The Victory Machine, Bay Area suburban legend, Ethan Strauss. Ethan, more trivia. Ready?
Okay.
What's a Justinian Jessup?
Justinian Jessup. It sounds like it's a potential Australian water creature. You know? Just okay. Guessing. Top of the head.
We're actually looking for an old wooden ship.
Oh!
That's what it was. Yeah, so sorry. It's all right. Maybe they'll get another one of these right.
I'll tell you what a Justinian Jessup is. You know what a Justinian Jessup is? It is you want on that wall. That's what a Justinian Jessup is.
I side with Marcus. Jade, start the clock. Take one. Kelly Oubre is killing Steph Curry. That's not a question. The Warriors have managed a pretty respectful 11-10 record this season after falling to the Celtics on Monday night, a game in which Curry dropped 38, 11, and 8, plus he had 3 steals, 7 threes, 12 of 21 from the field, a monster night wasted in over 38 minutes. At the beginning of the season, there was concern about how much Curry could withstand if he is forced to carry the load, and the Warriors had decent contributions from players like Andrew Wiggins, Eric Pascal, Draymond Green, all the whole cast of characters, right? But one name stands out, and that's Kelly Oubre. He's just not good right now. He hasn't been good all season. He's running to players left and right, sometimes his own teammates. He can't shoot. He's a negative across the board. The defense isn't even really there. The numbers bear this out. Add to that Kevon Looney being injured Tuesday night with an ankle sprain, and now the Warriors will be without a center, forced to play even more small ball when they take on the Mavs this week in a nationally televised back-to-back. They need all the help they can get. So getting back to Kelly Oubre, is it time to say goodbye, Marcus?
First off, that is far too negative commentary on a Black man. It is February 3rd.
Jade wrote
like, can we calm down? Can we get to February 20th before we just start ripping
just,
Black
I'm people? Just the Ron Burgundy here. I just read this on the screen.
Here's what's gonna happen to all of you. If Steve bitches Kelly Oubre in February, we're gonna have a problem. He could have done this in January. He could have done it in December. Don't wait till we start celebrating Black people that you bitched the dude from New Orleans who survived Hurricane Katrina, who made something of himself despite a struggled upbringing, who's been in 6 cities in 7 years and managed to carve a life out for himself. We are not about to disparage Kelly Oubre, not this month, not during this time. You hear me, Steve Kerr? You wait till March, buddy.
Wait till March 1st.
I'm just picturing Steve telling him that he has till March 1st and then Kelly Oubre asking why, and Steve going, no reason. No reason at all. No reason.
But the truth is, though, really, he's not going to do it. Like, for some reason, Steve is kind of into the Kelly Oubre experiment. Like, he's more patient. probably we've ever seen with a player, right? Like, and the truth is, it's hard to put a finger on what is it about Kelly Oubre that makes him so like, this is my guy. Even last night, he's like, yo, I'm not even thinking about that right now. And he doesn't feel like a Steve Kerr type of player. He averaged less than an assist for his whole career. And Steve is Mr. Ball Moving, Mr. Passing. I don't know what it is, but Steve ain't even close to thinking about this. He loves Kelly Oubre. He believes in him, and it ain't changing.
You don't think it might be the tens of millions of dollars? Some would say $80 million.
Just when does Steve care about that?
I mean, there's a
that's
little
still Laker money. That ain't Steve. Well, that, money.
But that's the thing, you know. That's the guy you got to. That's the guy you got to keep happy, right? That's the. That's
what about the guy who's making 50 who lives off the ball and sits 6 minutes in the fourth quarter? You think he's worried about keeping that guy happy?
I'm just
I don't think Steve has ever been let's keep him happy, let's do bend over. He'll explain, he'll probably do a little bit of
the exploits of one do not as directly inflate the Lakobian ego as the exploits of another. For whatever reason, there's always been that weird, you know, Steph's career has been so great for Joe Lacob, but there's been a little bit of, remember when he said to New York Magazine, it's not just Steph. I think there's always been a little bit of, maybe we could call it resentment. And I think they quashed it. I think that they get along better now, Steph and Joe Lacob, than in the past. But I think Lacob is more invested in the short term and Kelly Oubre really pop him to validate the tremendous expense that he offloaded to get him. And I'm not saying that's why Steve is doing it, but if we're mystified as to why Steve is doing it and continuing to go on with Oubre, who is, I mean, I can't even remember what he is a minus on the season. It's over 100, while the team without him is over 100 in the plus. Last game against the Celtics, that was like a mathematical impossibility. To be minus 25 in a game where nobody else is worse than minus 11, that is like a blindfolded Rubik's Cube.
In 26
somebody
minutes, though, right? Minus 25 in 26 minutes.
That's hard to do.
And it's not like it's just not of a pattern. You know, it seems to be very much of the pattern of the season. So he seems to be killing them. And if he turns it around, that's great. And it will benefit them tremendously. But there does have to be an expiration date on the experiment. If it continues to go along like this, I don't know if it's March 1st. I don't know if it's 2 weeks from now, but it just can't continue on like this.
In fairness to him, when he looks good, they look incredible, right? When he's making shots, when he's locked in, like on defense.
Walking into the locker room from the car.
Yeah, when he looks like good.
When his outfits are ready, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he'll throw in a game. Like, he actually had a pretty good week before this, right? He had the one stinker in Phoenix in his revenge game where he was really bad. But he's been solid. And when they're good, when he's good, they're good. He's really active. He pressures the ball. He kind of ratchets it up the defense. He makes a couple threes and everything is fine. Like, when he's good, they're good. But for some reason, when he's not good, he just completely falls off a cliff.
When he's good, they're good. And when he's not there, they're good.
Yeah. When he's bad, they lose. He drops. I mean, last game, opponents who he was guarding, their field goal percentage went up 29%. Like, how do you do that? 29%? Like, if you shoot 5% better against a guy, like, he's a bad defender. They shot 29% better than normal when Kelly Oubre was guarding him. That's insane.
I mean, he is totally the type of guy, and I'm more convinced than ever after we talked about with Black Trey, that he's going to go to another team and suddenly be good. I feel like that's inevitable. That's happening. It's happening. He's going to another team, and he's totally going to go. He's just going to go right back to 18 points a game, solid defense, and completely reroute everything. He is that dude.
So is this just an outlier? Because obviously he's not this bad, right? Like, no player is this bad. This is like Anthony Bennett levels of horrendous, right? Like no one's this bad, but what does it take to get him to be good again?
Maybe it's fans, and maybe you want to bump up what we're going to talk about on the docket just because you love your segues. Maybe Kelly Oubre needs the fans. Maybe he needs that interplay. Maybe that's what he's in it for.
I mean,
no, that's a tease. That's a tease for 20 minutes from now. Make sure to still tune
in. That's what I was saying. Saying maybe you could rearrange the Kelly Oubre Rubik's Cube and bump up the later thing for earlier. I was throwing it out there.
I think he needs to not be in a motion offense. I think he needs to not be in a space where everybody's moving and everybody's passing. It's clearly not his game.
And, I thought you said emotion offense, like not a emotion, but emotion
likewise,
offense.
Right? Likewise.
It's a vibes offense. Offense.
There is a very vibey element to the Warriors offense, right? You kind of got to feel it. But he needs to be able to ISO. He needs space, right? There needs to be like four things to do for him on the court instead of 14.
Yeah. I promise he doesn't need more ISOs. He doesn't need more ISOs. I promise.
No, he needs the ISO offense, right? That's what he needs. Everybody's standing around. You can crash the boards. It's not like, okay, I'm supposed to move right now. I'm supposed to pet. Like, he needs to be like, yo, you're going to do four things on the court. And you're going to be great at these four things.
At this point, maybe Kerr should try to coach him like Costanza in the exact opposite way that he actually wants, just because it might work. Like, Kelly, here's what I want. Early shot clock three-pointers. The second you get it, it's going up. That's what I want. Don't care if it goes in or not. Don't care at all. Please don't pass. We don't need passing. You know, we got enough people passing. You're the guy who doesn't. Maybe that will fix everything. Maybe that will completely change the season.
Did you see Steph's proud dad point last night? Oubre had the ball at the top, a wide open three, and he passed it up and dished it to Curry, standing wide open to his right. Curry hits the three, and then he immediately points at Kelly like, "That's what I'm talking about."
It was a very proud moment. What I loved is that Slater clipped that clip and said, "This is what the Warriors want." It was like he passed it like wide open Steph Curry 10 feet away. Where are the expectations here?
Hey, it's February. It's February. Calm down.
February. Remember that. Yeah. No, I think any kind of change there could really like kind of jazz up what Kelly Oubre has done on the season. Speaking of jazzing things up, take two. Are the Utah Jazz the best team in basketball? Fellas, not sure if you heard, but the Jazz are this week's number one in my power rankings right here on theathletic.com, in which I wrote, the Utah Jazz rode an 11-game win streak into the top spot this week as they've played the best basketball we've seen for an extended stretch this season. Their defense has been the elite standard we've experienced over the last few years, but the offense has ascended to a level I just never thought it could be reached. Play the God sound, Jade. So people are now asking, I don't know if you heard this. I don't know if you guys have heard these questions. People are now asking, are they a threat to the Lakers' inevitable title repeat? Ethan, are you buying or selling these Jazz as a threat?
I'm so conflicted because on the one hand, and this is a little backhand information, the Utah Jazz are an excellent source of new subscriptions on The Athletic. They've got this rabid fan base that pays to read about their team and feel as though the national media never covers them. So if you write something good about the Jazz, oh my, you are just raking it in. At the same time,
I'm not sure your bosses will appreciate that insider trading information.
Bleep all that, Jay. Just one long bleep.
Oh, geez. Look, we just serve the fans and attack whatever market inefficiencies there are. But on the other hand, I have this memory because I wrote about the Jazz being good early in the season. I had a lot of charged up Utah Jazz fans reading it, and they immediately fell apart and had bad locker room stuff occur, Rudy Gobert, patient zero, all sorts of bad things. So I'm a little bit snake bit, and I do feel like they rope us in every year, that they reach a nice rhythm at a certain point. And they've just always been so up and down. I do think they've taken the offense to another level. I want to study it further. Why are they shooting so many threes? How are they being so successful with it versus other years? But this does seem like it's part of a pattern, and no, I don't take them seriously as a threat to the Lakers.
Wow. Marcus, you know, win streaks are inherently fluky when it gets to double digits, right? And so it is a little troublesome to go out there and judge a team on its win streak, but even I think it's just the style of play. Like, they are shooting a ton of threes. They've never done that. They're hitting a good chunk of those threes. I think second best in the league. And at the same time, they're able to play defense. And Mike Conley is the guy that they were hoping they got last year.
That's why I'm buying this, though, because this isn't the Jazz we've seen. First off, they've never been 16-5, not under Snyder. It's normally struggle, find a rhythm, and then finish strong, and then fail in the playoffs, right? We haven't seen this, you can't see us, Utah, right? We haven't seen this, smack everybody around, Utah. And I don't think we can understate the importance of having good Mike Conley. They did not have good Mike Conley. Mike Conley's now shooting 40% from three. Like, he's controlled. He's literally a part of the offense. There were times last year I didn't even think he was part of the offense. And the other one, we kind of got to give credit to low-key. I know it's like he's been a bit of a laughingstock, but Jordan Clarkson's been amazing. Like, you tell this dude, off the bench, awesome. And you just go get buckets. And he has become an incredible bucket getter off the bench. I'm thinking with Mike Conley and Jordan Clarkson, their offense is so potent now. Do they have to necessarily pull Gobert in the playoffs again? Can they play him off the court? Can they deal with that? If you're looking at this Utah team, like, it ain't just stopping Donovan Mitchell anymore. Now you got to deal with four or five pieces. Maybe you can't so easily play Gobert off the court because they have four dudes who can get buckets at a rate they haven't gotten before. There's just a lot of reasons that makes this Utah team not the Utah team. Can they beat the Lakers? I don't know. That's a tough matchup.
Are they a little 2004 Detroit Pistons? You know,
I'll tell you this. I think they get by Denver this time, right? I think they'll get to face the Lakers. You know, I think they're that good. I'm normally whatever, Utah. You do this every year, but you watch this team. They're different. And not to mention, like, Shaq pissed off Donovan Mitchell, so he's going to be, like, all world forever now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're just a year later than what we thought. We thought when they added Conley, they would just be clicking immediately, but he really struggled to adjust from a Marc Gasol pick-and-pop situation to Gobert, and it seems like that's how long it takes, apparently. And so there are reasons to buy. I don't necessarily. I do think that we will reach the lull at a certain point after this peak.
If you're Kelly Oubre, are you like, hey, look, Mike Conley, give me some time, right? Right?
No. I mean,
yeah, he definitely has the clout of one Mike Conley and the history of one Mike Conley.
give him some time, man. That's all I'm saying.
Both lefties, you know.
Both lefties, right? Maybe Kelly. Getting back to Kelly, maybe he wants to be traded. Maybe he's just frustrated. You know who's frustrated but doesn't want to be traded? Take three. Bradley Beal is frustrated but wants to remain in D.C. Yesterday, The Athletic, Shams Charania, and Fred Katz reported that Bradley Beal has so far expressed he wants to remain in Washington and has not indicated he prefers to be traded. He is privately frustrated and confused with the perpetual portrayal of his situation. After seeing other players take criticism for requesting to leave teams, sources say Beal feels he's getting nitpicked for choosing to stay in D.C. It's quite the conundrum. Jade, I need some conspiracy sounds. At this point, it feels inevitable he's going somewhere with the amount of chatter out there. So, Marcus, will Beal be a Wizard after the trade deadline?
No, but it's not because of him. Come on, why we hate that he want to be loyal? Let's leave Bradley Beal be. We can't have it both ways. Can't criticize Kevin Durant for leaving and then criticize Bradley Beal for staying. Like, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. But with that said, if he's a Wizard after the deadline, that'd be crazy.
So do you believe him is the question?
Is it up to him? At some point, you got to sell high.
Well, what he said sort of makes me wonder if they came to him and they said, man, you're under contract for a while, and we're getting some really great offers from Indianapolis and from, we got a good one out in Minnesota. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting teams out there.
There's
and,
There's no way.
Woo! I just wonder if he's looked at some of the other potential options and thought, this is the devil I know and I'm going to ride it out. But if he believes that, that's quite a commitment and it's a lot of loyalty.
Wait, you believe him?
Not necessarily.
Hold on. I think it's easy to say, yeah, I don't want to be traded now. That can change in a week, right? Like, it's the easiest. And I think, and Bradley Beal's such a good dude. And despite, like, some people have criticized the frustration he's showing and everything, but like, he's such a good dude and such a good organizational piece. I think it's easy to have it, hey, he wants to stay in Washington right now. A week from now, if they keep losing, who knows? 2 weeks, who knows? Before the deadline's what, like a month and a half? I think it's easy for him to have that take for it to be reported, and it doesn't mean they're not going to trade him, and it doesn't mean he's not going to want to be traded.
Hmm. Yeah.
I agree with that. Like, it doesn't mean nothing will happen, right? It just,
right.
It's what you're supposed to say. He could be saying that now and behind the scenes, like, yo, get me out of here.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We've seen.
Genius.
He might not. I mean, we've seen what happens when dudes demand the stuff publicly. He might just not want to do that, right? He might want to be a little bit more coy about it and is saying he doesn't want to leave. That's the way you get. That's how you get the clout for staying and also getting out of there, right? Like, that's if you want to play this so you don't get killed for wanting out, but you also want to get out, you do it just like this. I want to stay. I'm loyal. Man, they traded me. What was I supposed to do? They didn't want me anymore. Like, that's the best of both worlds for Bradley Beal.
Yeah, it's genius. Genius play by him. I don't know if anybody believes it, but that assures you a standing ovation when you come back and they play that little montage up there of your time with that team, which is really the height for these struggling, scuffling, terrible teams. That's really the height of emotionality. It's not a championship. It's the return montage. The tribute video.
Wow, that's
unpredictable, but in the end, it's right.
Wow,
a few buzzer beaters.
Wow,
but the truth is, isn't he too good to be there? Like,
yeah, he's not on their timeline.
Wait, like, he's way too good to be there.
Yeah,
which is why I think people have been like, why doesn't he want to get out of there? I think that's why he feels that frustration, is because he's so good, and that organization is so. Not now, that's not really on Tommy Shepard, but whatever, you inherit a mess. Like, that's what happens with these organizations, right? And so this organization's so not that I think, like, people are like, no, I want to see Bradley Beal somewhere else. I think if the Suns still sucked, we'd be doing the same thing with Devin Booker, right? Like, at some point they'll do it with Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, it's
Doing that with Devin Booker last year.
We were doing that with Towns.
Exactly. We were
doing that with Towns. It's what we do. Yeah. We're
vultures. The Warriors media were trying to poach him away from the Wolves.
Yeah, they might want to. I mean, Towns.
Karl Anthony Towns.
Maybe Towns. Josh Okogie, but maybe Josh. Wow. But,
It was a little bit of poaching, but you know, now that superstar Wiggins.
Two Ubrays?
Now the superstar Wiggins is.
Can you stop with the black people? This is like, what come happened? On.
What are you talking about? I'm advocating for Damian Lee to be promoted. Huh? Mm.
Facts. All right. I heard the two Ubrays lie.
It's not.
I heard the jab.
I thought I was muted. Jade, bleep that out. It's not like I'm saying Smaljic or whatever the hell that guy. I'm not asking for Nemanja Nedovic to come back and take his spot. Like, you know, come on. I'm doing something.
Do not bring up Smaljic. It turns into a 10-minute conversation. It's for some reason it's very
don't worry. Watch when he gets on that flight from Orlando this tomorrow.
Oh, he's going to go off.
Watch out. Watch out the Bay Area. Oh, man. It's going to be a civil war out here.
Well, because he's one of those guys. This is a digression, but he is one of those guys where in the NBA setting, he has looked awful. So if all you've watched is NBA, you think he's awful. And that could be the right take, that he's an awful NBA player. But he's been really good in the G League. So it's going to be very interesting to see Warriors fans' emotions tested if he actually looks somewhat competent going up against Jalen Green and whoever else. But I can't even remember what we were talking about. What were we talking about? Something?
Bradley Beal, baby.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
which things morphed into weird. You trying to poach Warriors players to the Warriors from other teams.
Yeah.
Right. Remember when you did that, Ethan?
I did do that. I'm sorry. It's so mean to me.
Yeah.
But Bradley Beal that? Is yeah. not. But Bradley Beal is not going to be poached to the Warriors, at least. But he will be traded, I think, before the deadline, if I have to make a guess. He is just not on their timeline. I don't understand how they can get good enough before he's out of that great part of his career. They need to be in a rebuild. He doesn't really fit in a rebuild. It is the logical decision for those sides to part ways.
And get your draft bounty.
Get your draft bounty. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe you'll see something this week on that very idea. I don't know. On The Athletic. Subscribe to find out.
You can get two Oubres in the draft. You know, get that bounty, Washington.
Here we go again.
No comment. No comment. Speaking of things wasting away, take four. Is Damian Lillard wasting away in Portlandia?
Wow.
It's been 9 years since Damian Lillard, Terry Stotts, and Neil O'Shea started this era of the Portland Trailblazers. And right now, the team is just 11-9. They're riddled with injuries.
How many years? How many years has it been? Sorry, I know I'm stepping on you. It's been 9 years?
Dude, yes.
Oh, my God.
Well, he was in the 2012 draft, right?
2012
draft, that was the Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green draft. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just got a little shocked by that whole thing. That's a long time for that core, man. That's
Steph is in year 12.
Yeah, but that there has been dynastic championship runs and finals appearances.
Ethan wrote a book about that, so it's fresher.
Between us, we've written three books about it. The Portland era being 9 years.
Dude, that Jason Quick book.
Said, I should get started on Damian. Oh yeah, Jason Quick, go ahead, write the Damian Lillard book. Give me the
call. Write it, man. That's easy. You just got to do half. That's the easiest way. All right.
I'll take the Aminu, Al Farouq Aminu book. Can I do that one?
They're 29th in defense. And in Wednesday's Hoops Adjacent pod with Blazers reporter Jason Quick, the question was asked, is it time for the Blazers to move on from Terry Stotts and Neil O'Shea? With Dame turning 31 soon, there's not a whole lot of time left for Portland to figure things out. Ethan, do the Blazers need a change or do they get to play that injury card one more time?
Wow, I'm just wondering how many phone calls I want to receive from Warren Legarry as I answer this question of whether the Blazers should move on from Terry Stotts and Neil O'Shea, both Warren Legarry clients up there in Portland.
I'm a big fan of Terry Stotts. He should have a lifetime. lifetime of employment,
which says all you need to know what he thinks about Neil O'Shea, right? You hear that? We know what he says.
I think I was at Legarry's house when he was negotiating the contract, sounding like what's his face from Entourage, right? The Ari Gold.
He
just, like a true agent, he just screams and curses and slams the phone down.
That's professionist.
You think that's because I was there? You think I was there? And he calls the owner back. Like, I'm sorry, baby. Sorry, that was just show. No. It's just the show, baby.
I don't think it was performative. I think you're being professionist right now. I think you're just saying all agents act alike, and I think it's rude. Mm.
Yeah, you think it's not true.
As long as he ain't talking about the Blackhawks,
but you've met Warren, and you know that Warren is...
Leave Aragorn and Bill Duffy out of this.
I have to be honest. I'm not trying to skirt the question. I'm just trying to be completely upfront about this. I don't want to overrepresent my knowledge. I haven't been watching the Blazers recently. And I was wondering how to approach this. I feel like on a lot of these shows, people try to come up with something. I've been in Warriors land. I've seen some other teams. I've been following some other teams. I did not know it was going so bad in Portland of late. I actually did not know.
I mean, Yusuf Nurkic is hurt. He's like out for weeks and weeks with, I think, a broken wrist. CJ McCollum just got hurt and he's out for like 2 months. Like, things are not ideal, but Dame tries to keep them, chugging along and propped up. And I think the troubling thing is before the injuries, Marcus, the defense was supposed to be improved with Robert Covington coming there, and it was bad.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/MBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/MBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/MBAshow23 and get started.
I mean, it's
is NBA Twitter going to admit that?
Like, it's going to be bad, right? Like, it's they've got too many bad defenders. If you ask me, I'm with you. Terry Stotts' lifetime deal, like what he's been doing with what he's been given is actually pretty good, right? I mean, they basically was like, yo, let me give you 2 6-3 guards and make it happen. And yo, he got to the West Finals with it, right? They hadn't done that since it was Terry Porter, right? You know, so that's not nothing. But I do think Neil has some misses he needs to answer for. Like, I mean, what did he give for Robert Covington, who's averaging 7 points right now? Like, you know, at some point over 9 years, you got to be able to give this dude some help.
I joke about Covington. I thought Robert Covington's awesome. I mean, I wasn't against the NBA Twitter consensus, but I do think that as a collective, sometimes we don't admit when our perhaps too cute takes or look beyond the counting stats takes don't work out. I feel like we just move on to the next guy. We don't admit
that. Or maybe when our scouting reports maybe need to be updated on one Andrew Wiggins NBA Twitter,
Yeah.
I apologize. I did a whole big
culpa. Marcus, no need for you to apologize.
I was wrong. Absolutely. I should apologize on January 31st.
I apologize, Marcus. That's I apologize.
I mean, Neil's good with he's really good at identifying like small guys, small guards. He's really good at picking those. I don't know if his wing selection. I mean, while everybody's on wings and there's a wing movement, he just hasn't been able to find them, like, period. Like, it's been Mo Harkless and Alfred Aminu and Robert Covington and Rodney Hood. Like, he just hasn't been able to get enough good wings in the era where you need to have good wings.
Yeah. And also, I just think they never made the hard choice. I do. They never made the hard choice. They had that small backcourt to super talented guys. I do think to completely optimize their chances, they had to choose one of those guys, Dame, obviously, between the two of them, to have a more balanced team. And I think they settled into this is good enough. This is a good enough team. It's entertaining enough. We win enough. I do think it's an open question as to whether they made the tough choice to try to win a championship in this era.
But what's wrong with us? What is it not good enough? Does everybody have to win a title? Are we saying this about Reggie Miller, that he wastes his career? Like, maybe this is what it is. And what's wrong with that?
I made David Aldridge very mad by saying that Klay Thompson would have been better than Reggie Miller in that same situation, and it's not even close. He didn't.
Not even close. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I don't know.
Why are you going on Reggie, man?
I'm a big Reggie Miller fan, and I think if he had.
Reggie Miller's launched, underrated.
I would agree. Shooters are underrated. I'm a big Reggie Miller fan. If he had carte blanche to shoot
Zach,
more.
You know how difficult it is to come off a screen to your right and shoot. Especially from the right side of the court. That's incredibly hard.
That's why I dribble. I'm coming off a screen. That's so much effort. You kidding me?
Dude, it's an incredible shot. You know. No way.
Yeah. Look, to what Marcus was saying, though, it's not wrong necessarily, but it's something that I think we could admit to, that they went for getting a solid B every year, and maybe that's what you want, and maybe all you're giving fans is a nice regular season and a bit of a playoff run, but they didn't risk it in search of the A. And I do think that's part of the story of this. Oh my God, cannot believe.
I mean,
9 years, like a decade of this.
But you're in class with like a genius, and at some point a B looks good if it's like grading on the curve. There's somebody who's blowing the curve, and his name is Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant. Like, are you going to get an A? Are you going to get an A? So why not be happy with your B, right? What were they going to actually do to be better than the Warriors? Like, for real?
It would have been.
What's the move?
You would have needed injury luck. I mean, that would
have been. That's what I'm saying. It's like, that's why nobody blames Reggie Miller. Like, yo, it was Jordan. It was Pippen. Well,
this goes back to Reggie Miller being underrated. Reggie Miller wasn't flanked with a whole lot of offensive talent. I mean, it's amazing that those teams were as good offensively as they were. Not to get derailed into the 1990s. I just think in terms of strategy, and I think similar with the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are a different example of they had a team that was a solid, we can try to win 50 games every year, grit and grind, the fans love it, but they didn't really take that risk to try to make that leap, and that's part of their story as well, and it's just a choice. I'm not here to judge and to say bad choice or to even actually, say good
that
choice.
That is why you're here, sir.
My bad. Yeah, bad choice. You fucking cowards. Oh my God. Whoa, try to win a little bit.
All the yelling. Speaking of yelling, take five. Who were the hell were the people yelling at LeBron in Atlanta the other night in a scene that resembled Vince McMahon's WWE on Monday Night 4 fans? Were allegedly yelling obscenities at LeBron James while sitting courtside. Why were fans sitting courtside? Great question, NBA.
That is the greater question.
You asked yourself this. Yes.
I hope they heckled him with bad choice.
Julieta Carlos, one of the people who was escorted out of State Farm Arena, posted a video of the incident on her Instagram page. She said that she and her group were kicked out after her husband, Chris Carlos, better known as Daddy Carlos on Instagram, was cursed out by James during the game. She then stood up and said, "Don't fucking talk to my husband. Talk to my husband one more time and I will fuck you up. Yada, yada, yada." The whole thing has been folded into a referendum on a bunch of subjects, including COVID protocols, including allowing fans into arenas, but notwithstanding, guys, what is going on? Also, I think she won this whole thing because they didn't get banned lifetime, and she picked up about 70,000 Instagram followers. Marcus?
That's how we did she? Them.
Yes.
Spiritually? Did she spiritually win?
Gotten banned. And she went from 13,000 to 80,000 Instagram followers. Like, she won.
There's no question she won if she got Instagram followers, because if you've been to her Instagram, you know that's exactly what she wanted, right?
That's what she wanted.
That Instagram is absolutely designed to
also
attract followers.
Theory, Jade, conspiracy music, theory. She apologized the next day. She deleted all the videos. No ban. I think she took one so that they wouldn't get banned from games.
There's one valuable lesson that we've learned over the last week, right? You might want to be careful jumping into somebody else's fight in the NBA. First, it was Rodney Magruder who got all involved.
Ooh, I like
somebody else's beef.
Oh no!
Next thing you know, like, Clay and Draymond are roasting them publicly. And here comes Juliana, who's 5 foot nothing, 100 and nothing, acting like she gonna do something with LeBron. Like, it should be the other way. It should be your husband fighting for you in that situation. But this is where, you know, we've gotten a little bit out of control, where she can talk to LeBron like that, like, and feel
also
okay
about it. Weird history from his account of him, like, talking shit about LeBron James in Instagram posts and posting pictures of him sitting courtside near LeBron.
Oh man, Jade's conspiracy music has to be blaring. At this point, there are too many strange details.
Hold on, are you saying that this LeBron is in on this? This is all like a ploy?
I have no idea what
LeBron
it is.
LeBron got some shares in whatever company he's got now.
But it's so weird. This is so bizarre. And ugly in a strange. I mean, I'm looking at the whole situation. Almost feels like a collision of Curb Your Enthusiasm and Real Housewives.
That's exactly what I got was Real Housewives. I was like, okay, she's gotten carried away. This is, but true. To be fair, like, this is how wives are. There's been situations where my wife is like talking crazy, jumping. I'm like, listen, first off, Like, what are you actually going to do if this person is really ready to fight? Like, that, you know, so you're not going to, you can't do anything. But that's
a real thing. I don't know if that's what wives do, but I've definitely had girlfriends in the past, Marcus. They're talking at a party. I'm like, I'm going to have to be the one that settles this.
Absolutely.
Like, that's not you get to fight this person. I've got to fight this person. Like, this is what happens.
Oh, man.
And even if you try to fight, you're going to be out so quick. I mean, you know, obviously LeBron wouldn't ever do that, but maybe that's why she knows it. But I mean, her post game analysis.
She's literally standing up for my husband.
Like, yeah.
It's also the easiest thing to say for her, right? Because that fight never happens.
She's literally too young to remember the palace brawl. So it's just inconceivable that anything bad would happen to her husband in that situation due to her brinksmanship. Her brinksmanship at the game. But wow, what a way to learn that there are courtside seats at games, huh?
That,
oh my God.
LeBron's burn afterwards, all of it pales in comparison to the fact that there are people sitting courtside at games. I don't know how Michelle Roberts allows this to happen, but that's the unconscionable part. And by the way, they do not test. And they test, I think, for the lower area, but they don't test all of it. Now it's even sketchy on that end where testing is like hit or miss or not. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, yo, I wouldn't want anybody next to any players ever until this whole thing is over. I don't care. Sit up there in the nosebleeds, but to be right there.
They're going to have to padlock the hotels then if that is what they're attempting.
Well, on the court, you know.
Yeah.
On the court, anyway. That was too close.
Anyway.
Well, that's an uncomfortable way to end. Thank you for listening to Point of Contention right here on the Athletic Podcast Network. Make sure you check out all of the Athletic NBA show episodes. Monday, Basketball Buds. Tuesday, Tampering. Wednesday, Hoops Adjacent. It's Point of Contention on Thursday. And, of course, Nerdish, you wrote on Friday. Make sure you check out No Dunks, all the team-specific shows, House of Strauss, all that good stuff. And check out the Restricted Area from the Athletic's YouTube channel with myself and Wozni Lambre. This week, coming out today on Thursday, we're joined by Jerry Ferrara of Entourage, Think Like a Man, Power Fame, and super diehard Knicks fan to talk about the reclamation project that is the Tom Thibodeau Knicks. So make sure you check it out on the Athletic's YouTube channel. For Ethan Strauss, for Marcus Thompson, for Jade Hoy, I'm Zach Harper. Keep it locked on the Athletic.
Happy Black History Month.
Not married.